This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2023, held at Faith Builders on August 1 to 4.
So, let's get started. Thanks for coming. I am Dina Swanson. I've taught in some capacity for 42 years. Some of it was marching band, some of it was homeschooling, and a lot of it has been English, 14 or 15 years, but I taught English when I was homeschooling too, so anyway, I add that in there. But I love education, I love English, and I love art, which is really fun because I get to do both of those this week. So we're going to talk about the five different elements that are in any good high school or junior high English curriculum. And your books probably have all those in there. What we're doing with English is we're juggling all of these five. And we have more material to cover and less time to do it in than any, if you do a comparison, than any other class. 1 year I was begging for more time. And so I went and did like a little research thing because I love to research stuff. And I went to the Bible curriculum book, you know, which is like this thick and, you know, this big and had all these pictures and blanks and everything. And it was like 100 pages. And then I went to my grammar book and I added up the pages and that with my literature book and my vocabulary and spelling book, all three of them, you know, and it was like 780 pages or something like that. So I went to my principal and I said, hey, look, you've got 50 minutes and I've got 50 minutes. And I said, your book has 100 pages in it. You've got time to sing and, you know, whatever and do all this. And I'm trying to cram, you know, 800 pages into the same amount of time. Could you maybe give me 10 more minutes? Like, you know, where you had less time and I had more time. And he went, no. So anyway, so we've got, if when we're teaching English, we've got more material to cover and less time to do it in proportionately than any other class, really. It should be, you know, almost two separate classes. So this is the order I like to do it in my classroom, and I have a routine. This is how we do it. This is when we're doing it. We're going to write first. We're going to hit vocabulary and spelling next. We're going to, and then do our main emphasis of the day, which is usually grammar, and as you get into the older grades, more literature. There should be a balance in there. And of course, speech is going to be thrown in not every day. So we're going to talk about how time-wise do we do this, because I think that's one of the biggest things, and then how to do each one of these as effectively. And again, I'm really big on time management. Because I want to get everything in. I don't want to have a great literature discussion and, oh, we didn't review your vocabulary at all and your test is in 2 days. Ha ha, sorry, we ran out of time. That's not fair to the students. So how can we cram all this in there? All right, so let's say we have a 50-minute class period. It's nice to have an hour. I was in a school one time where I think we had 40 minutes. She can vouch for that. She was in that class. But usually about 50 minutes. And if you don't get that much, beg and do a research study and show your principal how many pages you have to teach and beg. So I usually spend three to 5 minutes on journals. I'm putting 8 in here because sometimes they get going and I don't want to interrupt them. But they do start that once they walk in the door. Like the assignment is on the board, or I tell them that as soon as I've got all their attention, I try to use up even those moments before the bell. About 8 minutes to review vocabulary and spelling, and I'll show you how I do that. And again, there's the meat of our lesson, about half the time almost in grammar, because that's usually what we hit hardest. And again, this would flip as they get older, a little bit less grammar, a little bit more literature, depending on the curriculum that you're using. But about 34 minutes of that, I feel, should be, you know, pull out the big guns and hit your grammar or your literature, because it can be really easy to spend way too much time on any of these. So we have to give that the most time. And then speeches are not you know, they come up once a quarter or something like that. I was blessed to have a speech class. The last time I taught in a high school, we had a senior high speech class. And that was wonderful because that was all we did. And we had lots and lots of time to do it in class. Usually we don't, though. So how do you do that? You get in, depending on how many you have in your classroom, You can do, if it's a bigger class, I try to do 3 or 4 a day all week. They're usually only 2 or 3 minute speeches. So I might do that during, as part of the grammar time or something like that. You know, youth are going to get up, or even one a day. I've got a really small class now, and we do one a day. And I tell them, nobody's on Monday, because that's scary. You're on Tuesday, you're on Wednesday, you're on Thursday, you know. And that way they each get to get up and do it. It only takes 2 minutes of your time, rather than we're going to take one whole day, and that's all, you know, all we're going to do. I like the variety, too, it gives the students to have one a day or 2 or 3 a day. So that's how I have found, obviously it wiggles in there, but that's a kind of a general format. All right, writing. I love to use these little journal thingies because I have found that they need daily practice at it. Too often we wait until the writing unit, which is, you know, awful. We don't write all year long, and then now it's time to write, and they all go, and they hate it. Or like once a quarter or once every 2 or 3 weeks or something like that. And they just really dread it because of these huge, big, long writing assignments and everything. So what I like to do are journals, and I use these little Mead composition books there. And we write every day, just a little bit. It's not threatening. It's not intimidating. It's fun. They look forward to it. In fact, I've used it as a punishment before if we weren't getting... Again, I'm in a different kind of school right now, but if we actually will do them all together right before Bible because of the way that my classroom is set up now. And if we were running a little bit late, I would say, oh, sorry, we don't have time for journals today. And, oh, no, you know, so that the next day they made sure we were back on tracks because they did not want to miss writing in their journals. So it gives them daily practice, and it really motivates them to write. I start out very easy. In fact, sometimes beginning of the year, we will just write down your 3 favorite snaps and put a little bullet point on there, like to start really, really easy like that. That, if you think about it, is an outline for a 5-paragraph essay. That's how we're developing that. So that is a really easy way to start. I might do that for a couple of weeks, beginning of the year, and then we'll go into sentences. I like them to write at least 3 sentences. I say if you're in 3rd grade, 3 sentences. If you're in 4th grade, 4 sentences, etc. But if we're pressed for time, I'll even say with the high schoolers, I'd like you to write a whole paragraph, you know, but you have to at least have 3 sentences. And that way they've got 3 ideas, and that's always the magic number for an essay or something like that, to have 3 points. So if anybody is interested, I'll talk about that in a minute. All right, so it's conditioning. Right? They walk in the door and they know the first thing we're going to do is write in our journals. So they get their journals out. They just know that's what to do. And that sneaky transfer from writing 3 of your favorite snacks or 3 hymns you like or 3 favorite relatives is really a sneaky way to transfer into write an introduction of why you love your relatives. Give me a paragraph on relative number 1. Give me a paragraph on relative number 2. Give me a paragraph on relative number 3. And then wrap it all up and tell me why you love your relatives. Isn't that great? That can even be done Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. When they get more advanced at it and it's not so scary. We're going to write a page. Here's your little, make your outline. Here's your intro paragraph today. That's all you need to do. Write an introductory paragraph about how much you love your relatives. Tomorrow, you can write about grandma. So it's a little sneaky way to transfer them from just jotting down your 3 favorite snacks into writing a 5-paragraph essay. Okay, journals, and again, this is all talking about journals. They're totally creative. I do not grade grammar or anything. I don't even grade the quality of their sentence structure. It's just to get them writing in a non-threatening way. I'm not gonna get my red pen out and make X's and spelling and everything. Just write it. Just get your ideas out of your brain onto the paper, because that's really hard for most students. And again, I start mine in 1st grade. We do journals. Even if they can, I just like, just write the letter. What is your favorite snack? Pretzels. Okay, pretzel. What letter is that? Good, write a P and draw a pretzel. You know, anything, just get them to write. So it's not content-based, it's not quality-based. It's just to be artistic and to get the ideas from their brain to the pen on the paper. And that's what we're doing, is we're practicing that process, and it carries over. It really does. If they can think it, you can write it. You can say it, and then you can write it, right? So think it, say it out loud, and I'll even get them to do that. What are some ideas? Great, get your journals out, write it down. That transfer. It teaches them that writing is easy and fun. This isn't hard. Like I said, my students are upset if we don't have time to do it. And the only thing I say is this is not a Dear Diary session. I always say, if you say that, you know, you robbed a bank last night, I will tell your parents, I will tell the principal, and I will call the police. So this is not, you know, confession time or whatever, unless you really need to confess it, you know, but I let them know this is not public. Nobody reads it but me. But if there's something in there that I think your parents or the ministers or whatever need to see, I will let them know. Because it's more of a writing exercise, not a confession session. Does that make sense? Hold them accountable. All right, so that's the only no. It's not a Dear Diary session. All right, have a plan. I am not super organized, although that's been my goal this summer, is to make a list of everything and have it all planned out. But my general plan is on Monday, we write about your church sermon. Tuesday, we do question cards, wins little game kind of things. Wednesday is encyclopedia day. Thursday, I try to choose a topic question to write about from literature or history. And Friday is creative art journaling. So what does all that mean? That way, I don't have to have a plan. I have a plan. It's right there. And I'm done. Monday, that's always three questions. What was your sermon about? What did you learn from it? And what was the best part of your weekend? It's real easy. So my sermon was about Jonah. What did I learn? That I can't run from God. He sees me all the time and knows what I'm doing. And the best part of my weekend was we went swimming at the creek with my cousins or whatever it was. So super easy. I've even had students write little notes. Like I tell them, because a lot of times they're like, oh, I don't know. You know, I'm like, you can write about Sunday school. You can, you know, whatever. And I tell them, take notes. Then you should be sitting there in church and writing notes. And they will bring in their little bulletin with their little notes on it. And I'm like, great, put that in your journal. You're done. Write your favorite part of your weekend. You know, so it really does help them, number one, write, to remember. You know, it's kind of a summarizing exercise as well. But I do think it's important that I met a family one time. I think we went to their house after Sunday church. And the dad went around the table and said, all right, every one of you children and visitors, whatever, tell us what you think about what you learned from the sermon. What did you get out of it? Rather than we hear it, we forget about it. The next day, can they remember what it was? It's helping their long-term mental retention as well. All right, Tuesday, I love these little cards. They had Deeper Talk, huge deck of cards, some game on the choir tour I was just on. And they were asking these wonderful questions, fabulous. And they're not all appropriate, but a lot of times they are. And I'll just flip and pick one out. They're sitting on my desk. I grab them. Story cubes is a good one too. I'll roll it like this is, tell a story about a magnet. I'll pick the best three, or a key, or a tent, was that a pyramid or something like that. And I'll give them an example, like, did you get locked out of the house? Or did you go camping one time and it rained all over and you got soaking wet? Or you were playing with a magnet and it did something, whatever. So I'll give them a couple ideas to get started and say, okay, write a story about that. Wednesday is Encyclopedia Day. There we go. That's not what I wanted. Where's Encyclopedia Day? Now it doesn't work at all. On these days, we just grab an encyclopedia. There. We grab an encyclopedia, and they're supposed to, that girl painted it. She took it home and painted it. They usually don't do that. We have colored pencils, though. And before they came in the room, I would set an encyclopedia on every desk, and they were supposed to open it up, find something from science or history, because almost everything in encyclopedia is from science or history, and sketch it real quick. Give them a second, and I'll say, okay, now you should have found it by now. Now you should be sketching. And a minute later, now you should be putting some type of color on there, and they know to have their colored pencils. I did this with my seniors. They loved it. And then write a fact about it. Read through there quickly and read what's a fact about a whale or a oriole or a spider or whatever. And I wish y'all could see that better, but this girl was really creative, and she did some deep sea viper thing. And even her writing was like shaky and scary, you know. They just get creative. Here are 3 or 4 minutes, and all you're going to do is be creative. Get your journals out, get your color pencils out, Just write and be creative. And it helps so much in the other areas of English and school in general. So, all right, Thursday, I'll pick something we just read about in a literature story or something we're studying in history. If you were on the Panama Canal and you were a worker, you know, how would you feel? I hope I don't get malaria or whatever, you know. Or we worked all day and it was really hard and whatever, so-and-so fell in the swamp or whatever. So give them some ideas to get them going. Or ask a question. One of my favorite one was we were reading The Hiding Place, and it was if you were the pastor and the lady came in to your family with this little Jewish baby, will you take the Jewish baby? Anybody know what the guy said? You remember? He said, no. He said, no, it's too much of a risk to my family. Okay, if you were that pastor, what would you have done? You know, that kind of thing. Just anything from literature or history. Just think, you know, what were we studying? And this way you don't have to stay up till midnight the night before. What are the topics? You know, just think about what you were reading in one of those books. And Friday is creative art journaling. And I'll show you some pictures of that. That is just for fun, to be creative. And again, people say, well, that's wasting time. No, it's not. It's getting them to be creative. And if they can be creative in their journals with drawing things and thinking outside the box, they can be creative when they write, and they'll be creative when they do math, and they'll be creative when they go to history and think, oh, I hope I don't get malaria, or whatever it is. It really does carry over. It's a way of thinking and conditioning and training them that school is not just boring. Writing is not just boring. It's fun and it's exciting. So I'll show you a couple of examples of these, and then we need to move on. The one on the left was tear the paper. That's it. Tear your paper and make something. A third grader did that, y'all. A third grader. You know who's the most creative? The second, third, and fourth graders. The older they get, they've been sitting in a desk for how many years, and they lose this. That NASA study, I don't have that in here, but there was a NASA study done, and in kindergarten, most of the children tested, like 99% of them tested in the creative genius range. They followed them all the way through. By the time they were seniors, it was like 1% or 2%. It had been trained out of them. What do you want me to write in the blank? You know, this is so good for their brains. The one on the right is you put your foot on the paper and you trace around it and then you color it or whatever. Anything like that. I've got a whole list of them if you're interested. The one on the left was draw lines. That's it, draw lines. Any kind you want. And again, I will give them examples on the board to get their brains going. I think I told them you can draw cats or something like that, and one of them did cows or whatever that is. Draw your initial and doodle inside of it and color. Peter, you can come in if you want. And then I also use the journals for textbook writing assignments, like from the English textbook, whatever. When we do get to a writing unit, jot down an outline or ideas. Like if it's character sketch, I'll tell them about my grandpa and working in the whatever. He'd work up in the shop in lawnmowers, and it smelled like sweat and oil and grease. And what did he look like? And he was really tall with these bright blue eyes. And he would make jokes. And he taught me the difference between a flathead and a Phillips screwdriver. And I'll just describe this, and I'll say, okay, who's your relative? What do they look like? What do they teach you? Where do they like to be? What do they do? And oh, my grandma bakes. Write down. You know. So they'll jot that down. I always say use bullet points. The dotty dots help their brains think, you know, just rather than boom, boom, all these pages or all these lines of writing. And then the next day when they come in, hey, get your journals out. Remember the character sketches we worked on yesterday? There you go. Write about your grandma baking cookies or whatever it is. So we use them for daily writing. But if there is an assignment in the book, we'll do the outline, and then that'll be their assignment for the next day. And that way they've already got the outline started, and it's easy squeezy. Lemon peasy or whatever. I always say that wrong. My students correct me. All right, we already talked about that Encyclopedia Day. So that's star number one. I suggest using journals. Again, write in them every day. As soon as they come in, no, they just need to get them out. Courtney.
What kind of grade do you give for that? Do you give like a participation grade? Do you actually grade it?
I do grade it.
You do.
Yeah, they have to turn them in once a week. And I have them number them, 1, 2, 3, so that way I can check they did number 57, 58, 59, 60, number them at the top, and then I'll check them off. And I write something on every page. I will write a smiley face or a check, and I try to write one comment, like, I felt this way too when I was, you know, in your age or whatever. I try to write a little comment in there, and then I return them. And if it was a participation grade. If they wrote their three sentences, then they got, and I would tell them, this goes in as a quiz grade for the quarter. Now think about that. I tell them, if you get that, you get 100. That doesn't, I mean, it's 9 weeks, you know what I mean? It will help their grade a little bit, but if you, it's more the accountability. You will do this and you will get a grade. And I very rarely, actually there's one person in your class that got a 60 in their journal one time. So I tell them, and I'll write on there, you know, your grade, like I'll put 100 because you did everything, or 60, you need to write at least three sentences on each page. And I rarely had that happen. Usually they all did that or more. Does that make sense? So yeah, I do think using it as a grade, great question, is good for leverage. And this is just a little thingy that I did because I had a lot of questions about it. It's in that room over there, but it goes all the way through. It has all kinds of ideas and examples. Here are 61 ideas for creative art journaling and just different writing assignments, all kinds of stuff. So if you want more information on that, it's there. I can also send you an email copy if you want to print out your own. I just found people like things that are printed out. All right, number two. The second star is vocabulary and spelling. Give them something to hang their hat on with vocabulary. They see these big words and they have no idea what they are. They have to have a picture. And I have found, I taught Abeka for several years. And so I found if we started it on Monday, by the time they had their quiz on Friday, because it was boom, ba boom, ba boom, you know, you're done. If I showed them the same picture and used the same sentence 4 or 5 days in a row, the test grades were wonderful, all right? So, example, use the same sentences, examples, every single time. That way you are cementing in their brains the concept and the word picture. And I've had students tell me years later, yeah, every time there's that word, whatever it is, I think of that picture or that concept that you told us. So, this is an example of one of my slides. Ludicrous is a giant rubber ducky being pulled by a boat or something. That's just ludicrous. It's laughable. It's ridiculous. Why would you have a giant rubber ducky in the bay? I still don't know why. I just found this picture and thought it was great. But it helps students remember. And if you show this to them Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I have slides, by the way, of all of these, Abeka, 6th grade through 12th grade, with pictures. If anybody's interested, email me. I'll talk to you about it, okay? Talk to me after class. They're already done. I did them for my students, and I'm like, hey, you know, let's share the love here. And what was I going to say also? That their test scores just went through the roof. It really, really works. Oh, I had a teacher one time that did not have a projector. The first time I came to Faith Builders, I was like, oh, ooh, wow, look at that. And then I went another, and I thought they installed it just specially for Faith Builders. And then I went another room, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. And I start looking around, and I'm like, are these in every room? And so I went to Goodwill, and I bought this horrible little projector, and everything was like red and yellow. And anyway, I am blessed to have one now. My classes are so small now, I just use my laptop. But I had a teacher one time that had a bigger class, and she printed off copies of these and hung them on the wall. And then she would just go over, okay, ludicrous, laughable, the giant rubber, and I make them say them. Read it with me, go. Ludicrous, do it with me right now, go. Laughable, ridiculous. And that way they're saying it, they're seeing it, they're hearing it. But she would do the same thing, and she would just point to these pictures on the wall. At the end of the week, she put them in a file, she had them for the next year, and then she got the new, printed the next set and put it on that. So if you want a PDF file, I can do that too. All right, here are a few more. Valor, bravery, gallantry, heroism. And I always use example of David and Goliath. He had valor, right? And again, I'll make the students read these, say them out loud, we'll go through. Inflexible, this is a hard one for them. Firm in will or purpose, unyielding. And they love those silly flexible rulers, which drive me crazy because they don't, they're always bent or something, but couple of my students had one, and so I would actually pick it up and show, you know, this is flexible, wood one is inflexible. It's firm. So that way they're actually learning two words, flexible and inflexible. But it gives them something to remember. When they get to the test, I'll see them. They close their eyes and the ruler thing. Okay, demeanor. Some of these are really hard. We don't normally hear this word used, but demeanor is the outward bearing or behavior, the way someone carries themselves. And so I love to use this example. And if I don't have one, right, I would try to think of one. What's the best way to explain this? Okay, if you had to go to the doctor, you would want a doctor with a very professional demeanor, not, what do you want? Hey, with his feet up on the desk or whatever. So that's when they think of demeanor. I hope they think of the doctor's office. How do you want your doctor to be? Irreverent, disrespectful, lacking appropriate seriousness. And I will tell them the story of a certain church I was in. And at the end of I have lots of stories about that church. One time the mom would take the baby out, and then the dad would take the next one out. And then about that time of the sermon, and he was sitting on the men's side, pretty far, well, at least more than halfway up, or right in the middle. So everybody from here back on the women's side could see it. When the parents were both gone, the boy would grab his dad's laptop or whatever it was, tablet, I'm assuming he was reading the Bible on it, and he would get up Angry Birds and play it during the sermon while we were all sitting there trying not to look at this, you know, and he's playing with it. So that is irreverent behavior. At the end of the service, the boys would go in the pews, and you know how they can, which I'm thinking, if I even tried this, I would break both my legs, but they step on the back of they go up the pews, and they jump from pew to pew by stepping on the back of it, and then they would have all made their bulletins into paper airplanes, and they would fly them. So that was the closest I could find of somebody flying a paper airplane in church. So when I say irreverent, they automatically think, oh yeah, flying paper airplanes in church. That's irreverent. It gives them something, and use the same example every time. It's conditioning. That will help them learn it long term. For spelling, use audio and visual clues. It's okay. I've had my students later years tell me that the audio clues were more helpful to some of them than the visual ones. And have them write these down. I do not make my students write them down 10 times. We'll do at least once as we're reviewing it, and then we'll have the practice test. If they miss it, they have to write it 3 to 5 times, but never 10. They just write it sloppy, and it makes them hate spelling. Exclamatory. They kept missing the clam. So I would say exclamatory. Say that with me. Exclamatory. And I never had a student say, that is an exclamatory sentence. They would say it's an exclamatory sentence. But if they had to write it, they would remember the clam. They kept missing the A. So there are their practice test. See the clams? See how they drew the clams on there? See the clam? I made them draw a clam. Dormitory, they kept missing the it, so they drew a pillow for the I. Don't just tell them write dormitory 5 times because you missed it. How can we remember dormitory? Well, it's where you sleep. So let's make the I a pillow. Do something. Renovate. They kept missing the schwa sound, the So if you renovate your kitchen, you're happy because you have a nice new kitchen. Draw a big smiley face. It's renovate. Say it with me 3 times. Renovate. 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 If you had that on test tomorrow, you'd probably remember an O. If I did it 5 times in a row for 5 days or whatever it was. How much? Oh, when your house got repossessed because you owed how much money? $4. Yeah, $4. There, S-S-E-S-S. Draw the dollar sign. See, and then they even wrote $4 on there. So use little things like that, especially if they miss it on their practice test. And I will go through and make a list of every word that any student got wrong. And I will try to come up with something for that one letter they missed. Usually it's a vowel. All right. These I also use for my spelling words on the slides and break it into things. I like to use things like this too, exploring and placing. And I say, oh, that's so easy. You learned that in first grade. Say it, drop the E, add ing. And of course, first graders know that, you know, and the ones that are like, oh dear, you know, I better remember that because I'm in 12th grade or whatever. Immediately, I ate 2 M&Ms. Immediately, I ate 2 M&Ms. Things like that. Help them figure out what they're going to miss. Sometimes guys love this. It's numbers. It's 4 plus 4. Judgment. Judgment. 4 plus 4. So they need to see it. It helps so much if there's white space, if it's broken apart and there's white space and different little things like that. And again, I don't do that for every single one, but I will go through and see what they miss, and you'll know year after year, you'll know, and I'll tell them, this is the hardest word on here that every student misses. Usually it's judgment. They want to put an E in there or something like that. Just remember, it's 4 plus 4. Easy squeezy, lemon peasy. All right. These are fun too. Break and break. It helps so much if they can see a picture of it. The brakes are on your car, but I did break the vase. Or I'll do like, think you eat when you have a break. You eat some food at your snack. So I'll do EAT. That'll help them remember that. But don't just say it's break and break. You got it? Show them a picture. Give them a way to remember it. You eat on your break. EAK. All right. Pronunciation. Oh, I got some new students, and I'm just a stickler with pronunciation. It drives me crazy, and this was one of my worst ones. Anyway, and so we were going through, and it was, you know, at the end of the book, and into the English books, they have the trouble sections, and one of them was this, and I don't remember if it was during a Bible class or a history class or something like that, but months before, I had said, oh, people always mispronounce this. They always say, male factors. And I'm like, don't say that. That's not how you pronounce it. I made them say it correctly 3 times, blah, 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 blah. So months later, right at the end of the book, and you know how you go around and like you answer the first and then you do the second and you do the third. And it was this new student that I'd had for the first time that year, but it was March or April. No, it was April. And it was his turn. And I was like, okay, number 7. And he said, malefactor. I said, yes. So make them say it correctly 3 times. If there's something like that, pronunciation doesn't matter. That's not one of the stars. That's just one of my pet peeves. All right, number 3, grammar. Be enthusiastic about, we get to grammar, we get to do art. Get your rulers out, get your colored pencils out. This is gonna be fun, not now, time to diagram. He said that this morning. Don't be negative about anything, right? If whatever you love, your students will love. I love old dictionaries. I love the way they smell. I open the pages and snip them. Whatever you care about, your students will too. And it shouldn't just be frisbee disc golf or whatever. It should be everything, different things. And be picky about it. Your best students will, I love to do when it's a whatever. And they'll, you know, it was a stream. It was a clear stream. And it was a bubbling stream, and I'll say, oh, you got a 99.5 bubbling. There you go, it's bubbling stream. So be picky and try to catch, like, come on, you can do it. You can get a complete 100. Be really picky and try to catch them on little things like that. This is an example of some of my students diagramming, 7th, 8th grade, I think it was. I told them, get out your colored pencils, look at all the white space. I even tell them sometimes, I'll give them typing paper for spelling too. That way all these extra lines aren't on there. Or I'll say, hey, look, do it, you know, don't do it all, whatever. Use different colors. Have fun with it. I make a big deal when we get to the forks and we have compound subjects. I think that's fun. So we did a couple of these. And then we started getting a little crazy and we said, They were asking me, actually, if can we, whatever. I said, you can do the whole class. And they said, can we? And I said, sure, I don't have time right now, but you want to do that? So several of them brought these to me later. We had so much fun diagramming that they got to make these little forks. And then this one girl, she just graduated, actually. So a bunch of them did that. That was not a homework assignment or anything. They were just having fun. Did the entire school. 150 people. And they were kind of being lame and doing one verb on there, like they love or something. She did, like, all those verbs on the right. It was good stuff, too. They love school. They try hard. They make good grades. So approach it with, yay, we get to do art. Get out your colored pencils and your rulers. This is the best part of the day. I just think it's fun. There, I had to throw that picture in. See the indirect object? The students wished happy birthday. They wished it to indirect object Mrs. Swanson. I know usually Rebecca does them down on a thingy, but we were using a different curriculum, and I liked that better, to be honest with you. So they made me a diagram cake one time, because I love diagramming. Okay, there you go. There's your gurgling stream. It's got a verb ending on it. Find those things. Be picky. Make it like a challenge. I'm tutoring a student right now, and I said, we're going to play a game. It's called Defeat the English Teacher. And you're going to get everything correct, and your teacher's going to be like, whoa, what happened? You know, so make it fun. It's not a chore. It's fun. Give examples of bad grammar. I call it hillbilly language. If somebody says, I'm going to go lay down, I'm like, no, you're going to go lie down, because I lie down. They need to know what it sounds, they need to hear out loud what it sounds like correctly, and you got to know your stuff. And if you don't, I'll be honest, I remember the first time I was teaching some eighth grade grammar, and I was like, wait a minute, I don't remember this. And I had to go study it and kind of relearn some stuff. So if you don't know it, defeat it. Don't just guess, don't rely on the answer key. You go home, you figure it out, write it down on paper so you'll see it and everything, figure it out. This is the hardest one, because it's lie, lay, I have lain, all I have lain, and then I'm going to lay the book down. Now, I always do the first aid book, because what got laid down? Oh, I'm going to draw really bad here, because it's a first aid book, so I laid the first aid book on the table. The hardest one is lay, because it goes both ways. I lay the book down, but past tense, I lay in bed for 5 days when I had COVID, right? So I make them say that 3 times. I lay in bed. I lay in bed. Let them hear it correctly. Hopefully, they'll get it. That's a hard one. All right, star number 3, literature. I love literature. Give little quizzes. Easy ones, not complex ones. Read key passages aloud, even twice. I had some wonderful college professors that would read these beautiful, and I'm like, oh, it is beautiful. It's not always beautiful when you read it. It is when you learn how to love it. But at first, they need to hear it out loud, and maybe even twice, and enjoy it. Come on in, the more the merrier. Explain foreign concepts. I have found a lot of times I was like, isn't that neat? Isn't that wonderful? And the students were like, we don't get it. And I'd be like, why not? And they'd be like, what does that mean? You don't know what that means? And I'd explain it to them. They need to understand the concept sometimes. And again, be enthusiastic about it. Never bored. Don't ever say, this story's boring. Say, this is, usually it's every story with me. This has a neat ending in it. Or this has the most beautiful dialogue in it. Or find something in each story. Usually I'll look over them the night before and I will say, this has this wonderful thing in it. And make them water at the mouth. What comes next? All right, the quizzes. These should not be, give 3 motivations of why Mr. Mortimer did this. It should be, what was in the box? A shoe or whatever. It should be really easy stuff. We're not getting them to analyze and summarize advanced literature concepts. Did you read the story? What was in the box? A shoe. Give them really super, I try to think almost always nouns, unless it's like the whole gist of the story. Why did he want the money? Something big like that. But it should be really easy. It should not, it's just to see if they read the story. It's not fair to say, you know, well, Susie, the straight A student, can analyze this whole passage and blah, 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 and you know, Fred didn't get it or whatever. Just make it easy. Did they read the story? That's what you want to know. Okay, read aloud techniques. Reading aloud is very helpful in class. Number one, it's got to be a safe environment where they will not laugh at each other or whatever. I had one time, bless their hearts, these little seventh grade boys, and their voices would crack. And I had 2 or 3 little girls one time that went, and I was like, yeah, don't do ever do that again. Very good, so-and-so, Mr. Cracking Voice Boy. You know, another glare, you know, never happen again. It's gotta be a safe environment where they will not laugh at them, especially your junior high boys. Model good reading for them. Do expression if it's different characters or whatever. One time, was it your class? The play? I had a group that wasn't crazy about literature. She might have been, but the rest of them weren't. She was in my English class. 11th grade? And they did not really appreciate literature. Well, we got to the play, the funny, humorous play, and I just said, all right, who's ever, like, somebody volunteer, I'll be the woman in the story. Somebody volunteer to read the guy part. It was like a two-act, one, whatever, two people play. And nobody volunteered, so I said, okay, whoever I draw next is going to be it. And it was this funny guy. And he did this funny accent. It was like the wrong accent for the play, but it was great. And we were all hooting and hollering. We had tears running down our eyes. Somebody told me they looked down the hall, like, what is going in there? Model good expression for them. Get them into it. Get them to enjoy it. Have expression when you read. And critique gently. What I will usually do is I'll write on a sticky note, slow down. And I won't say it because Susie just read. I won't say, okay, Susie, you need to slow down. The next day I'll say, okay, we're going to pick up where we started and let's all try to work at reading slowly. Everybody write that on a sticky note, you know, put it on your page thingy, slow down. That way I'm not pointing out Susie, we all need to work on it. So gently critique, never pointing out a student, but to the whole class. All right, I'm going to do a quick example of this. The albatross is a giant, it's like the biggest ocean bird, and it was viewed as a symbol of good luck, that when, you know, ancient seafaring peoples or whatever, back when it was really scary and they didn't have all this technology, and if an albatross showed up, it was good luck. It meant you were going to have a good voyage and nobody was going to get scurvy and your ship wasn't going to wreck and get caught in a storm. So an albatross was a big deal. All right. So one of my favorite poems is Samuel Taylor Coleridge's The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. And there's this old man, and these people are going to a wedding, and he stops and starts to tell them a story, and they're bored because here's this old man stopping us. But the story got really good, and they start listening to this story. And I'm just going to read you a small part of it, but it's so important that we model this for our students. And a good south wind sprung up behind, the albatross did follow. Following the ship, and every day for food or play came to the mariners' hello. So whenever they would call, the albatross would come, and the sailors were feeding it. By the way, they're stuck in the doldrums or something like that. Like they were in a dangerous situation. In mist or cloud, on mast or shroud, it perched for vespers nine, so I think it was nine nights, whiles all the night through fog, smoke, white, glimmered the white moonshine. So it's dark at night and there's fog. And God save thee, ancient mariner, from the fiends that plague thee thus. Why look'st thou so? With my crossbow I shot the albatross. He kills this bird that is supposed to bring, you know, save them all from being stuck out on the ocean. He killed it. You know, if you just let her read that, yeah, the bird came, whatever. He shot the albatross. If you can read, I would probably do that twice. Like, get it? I'll do this sometimes while they're working on art. I'm going to read you some poetry just to make it. They need to hear these things. Oh, love it. The creation. I actually have a recording of James Weldon Johnson, African-American poet, reading this out loud. And it has the crackles because it's from the 1950s or something. And God, this is an African-American rendition of God creating. And there's some incorrect things biblically in there, but it's a good thing. And God stepped out on space, and he looked around and said, I'm lonely. I'll make me a world. And as far as the eye of God could see, darkness covered everything, blacker than 100 midnights down in a cypress swamp. That's way more fun than go read it on your own, okay? So take those 5 or 10 minutes and pick out a few passages, explain it to them, and get them excited about it. All you gotta do is read aloud and kind of fake an accent, even if it's bad. Okay, a concept, pass the baton. I thought this was a great story. They were excluding this boy, and then they finally included him and everything, and wasn't that great? And they said, what were they missed the whole point. He drops the baton while they're in a relay race. They had no concept. So I had a student come up. Here, come here, Courtney. Okay. So we're in a relay race, and I'm running, and I'm waiting for her, and she passes the baton, and I get it, and I go. It's a stick thing. See, in his hand. Thank you, dear. That was great. They didn't get that. And when she passed it to me, if I dropped it, oh, no, and then everybody runs ahead, and our team has to go back. Oh, no, and we, you know. So explain these things. We might know, oh, duh, that's what it is, but a lot of times I found they had no concept, and they missed the whole point of it. The Kiskis, it's fun to bring in objects sometimes. The Kiskis is a wonderful story about these little poor children that don't have butter on their bread or shoes on their feet. They have nothing. They're so poor, and they're learning English, and they hide, you know, they sit in the back and whatever. And at the end of the story, the dad has worked really hard. They all respected him. He brings in his crops. They have butter on their bread and shoes on their feet, and they can go buy a present for the teacher. And they bring her this wonderful box of chocolates tied with a pink bow. And there are enough for every student in the whole class. So the teacher, rather than saying, oh, yummy, which I would be probably tempted to do, I get all this chocolate. She said, you know what? They're enough for everybody. I'll take one. Why don't you pass it out to every student? And then all of a sudden, the Kiskis, who were looked down on, are now bringing us chocolate, and they're admired, and they go out in the playground, and they play with everybody, and everything's fine with the world, and, you know, has a happy ending. So the next day, usually I will remember that. Oh, yeah, and I don't do a lot of this, like, the day ahead of time. I'll do it the day after, because I have an idea while I'm doing it, or I'll remember, oh, yeah, I didn't realize we were going to get that story today, but we did. I'll run down to the Shady Maple, and I've got 18 students, so I'll get a box with 19 chocolates in it, and before we get to our next literature story, and I'll pull out the box of chocolate, and they all smile. And then I look, it has a pink bow, just like the one of the story. And I'll open the bow, and then I'll pat, you know. Things like that that will help you live out the story. It doesn't happen a whole lot. I had another one with Agatha Christie mystery story. Anyway, and the clue was written on lemon juice, and they had to hold it up to a candle and burn it or whatever. So I went home and I wrote, I love Jeff. I couldn't think of anything more exciting. And it's hard to write with lemon juice. It's kind of big. And I wadded it up and I threw it like on the floor like it had missed the trash can. And I said, oh, before we get to today's literature story, there is this, remember that story we read yesterday with the clue? Yeah. Well, there's a clue hidden somewhere in this room. You have to find it real quick. Oh, well, they couldn't find it for a while. One of them finally found it. And they held it up, and I think this has lemon juice on it. And Mrs. Swanson, do you have a candle? Of course I do. I brought one for today. And we light the candle, and then they held it over. But it doesn't happen a lot. But if you can do that every once in a while from something in your literature story, it will make it come alive. And they love it, and it's just fun. So be thinking, what could I do as I'm reading this? Another story was all about the pink plastic celluloid dresser set. And the girl ends up trading her mother's million-dollar heirloom pin, silver, sterling silver, or something like that, because this was in the window, and all the girls wanted it because it was pink plastic. And the whole point of the story is, how on earth could you have traded something valuable, you know, from your great-grandmother for a stupid piece of plastic? So they read the whole story about the celluloid dresser set, and they have no idea what celluloid is, and they have no idea what a dresser set is, or anything like that. So I like to at least show them a picture of it. I actually have some of this. In fact, this past year, because I had a student in this grade. Anybody know what that is? It's a hair catcher, hair saver. They would brush their hair, and they would pull it out, and they would stuff it in there, and then they would make jewelry and weird things like that. I got to keep going. Okay. Chamber pot. They had no idea what a chamber pot was. And so I said, well, you know, like, just back in the old days, and you don't have plumbing, and it's 20 degrees outside, and you got to go to the bathroom at 3 in the morning. What are you going to do? You got a chamber pot under your bed. And they go, oh, gross. Well, it's better than going outside at 2 in the morning. All right. And research things. Fascinating story real quick about the Mayo brothers. We read a story, and it said they had a skeleton of scar nose or something in their office. And I was like, what on earth was that? So I researched it. True story. In the Dakota Indian Wars, 38 men were hung. They threw their bodies in a really shallow grave, and that same week, they went and dug up their bodies and took them to these doctors to use for live skeletons in their offices. It's horrible, but it's interesting, and it makes the story a lot more interesting when you think about, and it's history. Look what they did back then. Can you believe that? And then I cry. All right, last one. Speech. Get their attention. Speech is a chance to get up front and show off and, you know, do whatever. Get their attention. Do something interesting at the beginning of your speech. I always tell them, you can't just walk up and go, I'm Dina Swanson. I'm going to give a speech about five essential elements of a five-star English program. Star number one is writing or whatever. Get their attention. Do something. I once had a student walk up and, like, fake faint. And so, of course, we figured out he wasn't really fainting. And I was like, nice try, but that has nothing to do with your speech. Try to have it do something with your speech. Dress up if you can. Dress up in the country or whatever it is that you're talking about. Encourage them. I've got an outfit I'll bring you. You know, oh, maybe my mom has a hat. Yeah, there you go. Make this fun, not you have to do a speech. Make it fun. What are you going to do? You get to get up and show off a little bit in front of your friends, whatever. Demonstrate. Can you bring an object? Even if it's not a demonstration speech. When I was in school, a boy brought in his bonsai. That's all I remember from all my speeches in all of school. That boy brought in all these bonsais that he had made, and I was fascinated. Bring something in, if you can just show it. This girl on the left did a speech on Iraq. The boy on the right did the Oregon Trail. He wore a coonskin cap. I got him that shirt and encouraged him to make a map, which he did. Okay, this is a funny story, right time. My son was at Westchester University, one that fainted, and he had to give a speech in his college speech class, and he wanted to do it on Bigfoot, because he was a science major. And so he wanted, for his attention getter, because I hope he learned that from me, you get their attention, you have to do something. And so he said, would it be funny if somebody came in like dressed like Bigfoot? And I'm like, at the university. And he said, mm-hmm. And I said, okay. So we looked it up, and it was like $200. So I went down to Belmont Fabrics, or whatever that was, and I spent $20 on this big furry thing. And we dressed up his little brother and put leaves on him and stuff. And he actually, right as my son started his speech, one of the first things was, and there's even been a Bigfoot sighting recorded right here in Westchester. And about that time, his brother came in the room, like that. He got an A on his speech. Encourage them to go the extra mile. Don't just, how many minutes do I have to have? How many pages have to be? I never tell them that. I'm like, it has to be wonderful. I don't care how many pages it is. I don't care, whatever, just make it great. Okay, you were there for that. One of them is here, he's a teacher. They had to do a persuasive speech, I think, and they were so good, I had them do it in front of the whole school for chapels, and they raised $300 for food for people in Yemen or something like that. Get them to do stuff. Don't just get them to do your speech. Say, that was great. You're gonna, for the whole school. We're going to put a can back there. And we're going to save these starving people or whatever it is. Get some action going there. This guy did Cold War air drills or whatever when they would sound the siren and you had to get underneath your, and he played a siren. Ooh, and he made them all get under their desks. You know, give them ideas. They won't have these on their own. But you can give them ideas, and then they'll do it, and then guess what? The other people see it, and they start feeding on it, and all you have to kind of do is get the ball rolling. You'll be surprised. They're way more creative than we are. They'll come up with way more ideas if you get the ball rolling. He was a pilot, and so he put on his whatever that is. I don't know. This is really funny. He did this whole speech, and he actually had a flight thing going on there, and I was like, wow, this is really neat. And when he went there, and I tried to sit in the back and go, yeah. So at the end of it, I was like, how on earth did you video that while you were flying the plane? And he said, Mrs. Swanson, that was a computer simulator. And I thought he was really flying the plane. So this guy was doing, this was my senior speech class. Cross had a hunch or something like that. So he came in the full garb and he was doing he couldn't bring a bow. He wanted to bring a bow and arrow. I said, no, it's a weapon. You can't have that in school. Anyway. So there you go. So those are our five things that we've got to do in a high school English class. It's a lot of juggling. Hey, look, he even has five juggle balls there. I didn't realize that. So have them, what has worked well for me, all right, is to have them right when they come in the room, do writing, do the vocabulary and spelling, show pictures, use the same examples every time so they'll get those ideas cemented. break the spelling words up, say them funny, exclamatory. Hit your grammar pretty hard, make it fun. Let them use color and rulers and use examples of the wrong way to do things and the right way to do things. Let them hear it out loud, have them repeat it 3 times. Literature, find something good in each story, read parts aloud, have them read. And speech, encourage them, give them ideas, have them dress up, have them make maps or props or whatever it is, and make it exciting. Give them lots of ideas for all these different things. You're the king or queen of your classroom. Give them ideas, make it interesting, and they all will start picking up on it. All right? One other thing is, we did not get into research papers, but they're very daunting. This is a step-by-step method of doing it little by little in chunks and keeping them accountable, giving them a grade every step of the way. Makes writing research papers way easier. It's also in that other room if you're interested. I love to talk about English and school and anything, so if y'all want to talk about stuff, come find me later. Thank you for being a great audience. God bless you as you teach this year.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at christianlearning.org or call 814-789-4769. Many Faith Builders recordings are also available on the Dock for Learning at thedockforlearning.org.